Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
This podcast is a Roifield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right. Yeah, I know.
Welcome to Intelligent Speech. And I know you're probably saying, for me, in lots of ways, this is my most favourite of the podcasts that I do. Hence its rarity. I just like speaking to people. I think if I have a superpower, it's that. And maybe it's just listening to people. Some of you who are listening to the podcast might know that in the last 3 or 4 months, I've become somewhat of a devotee of Clubhouse. Clubhouse is the new social media application where you can connect with people through voice, through sound. And when I first got onto the platform, I was like a babe flailing around in the water. But one of the people who I kind of gravitated towards just listening to them was Nicole Stark. And she wasn't really aware, but she was kind of one of my trifecta, one of the three people who helped me get my bearing on the app. And I went into rooms, as you do, and I suppose stalk is too harsh a word, but that's kind of what you do, you know. you hear people talk in rooms and you go, yeah, you know, I like what they say, and then you see them pop up in another room and you kind of follow them around. That's how social media works. The other two people were Drew Morrissey and Patrick, and they're just wonderful. All of them are just wonderful thinkers. And what I really like is when somebody says something which I haven't heard before. They give me really for pause for thought. So, Nicole, before we go on any further and we deal with the topic in hand, which is intimacy over sexuality, why don't you give us the cliff notes of Nicole Stark?
Well, first of all, thanks, Rachel, because I'm not sure I fit in the same caliber as Patrick and Drew. So that is indeed a compliment. And yeah, in terms of the cliff notes of me, I mean, I essentially just sit at the intersection of art and innovation. I'm really interested in developing evolutionary strategies that integrate points of intelligence. And so because of this, I've kind of been involved in many different industries, from Hollywood and startups and, you know, all the way to founding one of the first venture capital funds in 2013 that was exclusively devoted to Bitcoin, the Bitcoin blockchain at the time. So intentionally trying to expose myself to all the different domains in order to gain intelligence to figure out what is less measurable and try to make connections that are less obvious or less typical. So that's kind of what I'm about in a nutshell.
So you see, that to me makes you eminently very interesting, because how I came by you was intimacy and an intelligence, which I thought was very kind of tangible. And for me, you're describing things which aren't, you know, so it's the whole kind of Bitcoin thing. So when we then started to converse and there was this other side to you, which I wasn't aware of, that to me created some level of cognizant dissonance as about the picture of you of which I actually had. I thought you were somebody who was some kind of a philosopher / artist. Why was I so wide of the mark?
Well, the thing is that I intentionally don't like to define or put myself in a particular category. And I understand that human nature will place you in a particular category, whether we like it or not. But I guess I suppose that I've decided that that's an advantage, because then I have the element of surprise, and that I can usually exceed somebody's expectations because they're placing me as less accurate. And when they discover what is more and more accurate, that's a slower discovery process that can build some depth and hopefully some relationship. So I love philosophy and I love art and I love innovation and I love all of these things. And the majority of my conversations really are about activating intelligence. And I don't prioritize one intelligence over the other. And so that does land me more in the arts and philosophy, even though I apply that same knowledge to innovation and technology and primarily culture and really about developing relationships, the quality of relationships that we have to one another.
One of the cuts and thrusts of our conversation today is intimacy. And I've definitely discovered a new level of intimacy on Clubhouse. I think that this is, as a platform, fosters and accelerates a level of intimacy, but it's an intellectual intimacy. It's not physical. It can be sexual. You know, we can dream about and have fantasies about that person on the other end of the microphone.
That is wonderful. We encourage all of these kinds of intimacy.
But before we talk about maybe sexual intimacy, tell me about intellectual intimacy. If you're developing an app, I'm presuming you have to sit down with, creators, with coders, with investors, with marketeers, and there needs to be some level of a groupthink, a mind think, and which says to me that intellectually there has to be some kind of intimacy. You must be able to probe the mind, the psyche of those people around you, and them to do the same with you.
Well, there's a couple things that can be said here, but first let me back up a bit, Royfield, to frame it a little bit so that it's more clear, is that, like I said, I'm primarily interested in evolutionary strategies that integrate points of intelligence. And mm-hmm. one of my main tools for integration is intimacy. And I have several different tools, right? Because, there's all these different tools that we have that I think are depending on the context and the timing, right? That there's different tools for different circumstance. But when we're talking about intimacy, I also include sensuality and then you noted sexuality. But all of these things are human and we've mostly been socialized, or perhaps we sometimes naturally compartmentalize parts of our humanity in order to understand ourselves, right? Because they tend to be complicated. And it's easier to take bits rather than the whole in order to have some understanding. But all of these are parts of us, and it's really all a part of the same conversation. And so again, in context of integration, I'm interested in locating these vectors and engage the fullness of human integration. And that, integration seems to be more challenging and less clear because it's more complicated. And yet I find integration to be more powerful and more full experiences. So it's not necessarily about being sex positive, as you kind of mentioned, or necessarily about sexuality. It's about integrating and making room for all aspects of our humanity in any given situation. So if you're bringing up a situation that's in the context of business, then I think there's different levels of intimacy, right? I mean, shaking a hand could be intimate, all the way to, some physical intimacy around sex. So, and there's the spectrum of intimacy, like you noted, intellectual intimacy, emotional intimacy, physical, there's all these different things. So, but I think the importance is more about the conversation as a whole, that it's no one part and what intimacy requires are many different parts to come together. So that's kind of, I think, the starting point. I can also add that it's that this idea about not over-focusing, here I can give a little metaphor. It's in this integrating, it's that, and how everything exists in relationship to everything else. One kind of metaphor is around nutrients. Like, I don't know if you understand how nutrients work, but I like this metaphor, is that most of the nutrients found in food, right? They're very complex. And as soon as we isolate the nutrients, they're no longer synergistic. they're no longer integrated into one another, where they compound into complex nutrients with phyto and micronutrients, for example, which allow the body to assimilate these nutrients exponentially more completely. So I find that this is kind of a helpful metaphor, and I think it applies to all of our different intelligences. So I'll stop there because I could go on.
No. Listen, I've invited you onto the podcast for you to go on. So I think it's an utterly fascinating metaphor that the sum is much more than the individual components. Keep going. But I'm utterly fascinated to try and understand how this informs the way that you practically demonstrate your connection or intimacy in your day-to-day world.
Well, I find that I organize around values maybe more than principles, you know, and I enjoy reorganizing, you know, because I think that even our best frameworks and best, you know, are limited. And so, and there's certain things that help us organize and reorganize. And the process of expanding and layering instead of narrowing and isolating, kind of what I pointed to earlier. So I try to figure out ways that combine and add more elements rather than being satisfying with any distillation, which is kind of where humans tend to go. We tend to prefer a kind of isolation in order to manage something or understand it more completely. But it's less.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think that is? Why do you think that's our default position?
I think just kind of, as I said, it's easier to wrap our minds around, right? And it's incredibly efficient in terms of an immediate problem. Solving an immediate problem or addressing something immediate, it's super efficient for a short-term understanding, is to take something very specific, very detailed, isolate it, understand it, and then to address it. It's much more complex to bring in the multiples and have all of the different variables at once. That's much more difficult and less efficient in terms of time. So I think that's partially why we do that, you know, as a survival instinct, right? So I think that's one reason. And I think the other reason is maybe that because that's more efficient and more timely, we become lazy because it requires more work for us to, you know, to be more integrative, to be more complex in our navigation, to add more tools and more information to the picture, you know, to live inside this constellation and navigate that is far more challenging for humans.
You know, for me, you've kind of turned this a little bit on its head for me, because I thought to myself, right, there are, let's say, four types of intimacy: emotional, intellectual, physical, and spiritual. I'm sure there are many others, but that's what my little brain can kind of get its head wrapped around. And for me, intimacy is a simplicity, but for you, the building blocks of it are incredibly complex.
Well, that's kind of interesting that you noted that. I mean, I think I've been told that a lot, but I think the truth is that there is maybe a simplicity in our experience, but maybe what's occurring unconsciously or subconsciously or just immeasurably are so many variables that make up a particular experience. And I think that if we're going to affect that experience or locate potential points of growth and also potential points of failure, it's helpful to kind of be aware of all of these variables. And also to, I think I just said it, you know, is that, you know, and I can kind of give examples, but my point is that I'm interested in integrating, you know, the mind, the heart, and the body, and perhaps more specifically, relocating the spaces in between them all and the experiences that require them all to be activated at the same time.
So here's the thing. I got you wrong. Let's say, and I've kind of hinted at this in my preamble, that intimacy can really be fostered how on the platform that we met. And I believe just distilling people down to their voice and to their mind is a deeply intimate process. You know,
I agree.
You don't have the physical affect to distract you. You know, you can't smell them. You know, ultimately, it's at the core of that person's humanity. It's just their voice and it's just their brain. And I've had some deeply intimate moments on this app, speaking in rooms of just three or four people, where people have laid themselves bare, and I've displayed as much honesty as I could too. And it was kind of into that realm. And let's say that Clubhouse has many components. One of them is the during the day where there are formal rooms and you have stages, and it almost feels like a conference, you know, and people get up on stage and say their bit, you know, for a few minutes and they shuffle off. And yes, you can have a throughput of ideas. But for me, the app then changes in the evening where people relax and become intimate.
And yes, and are you going to note my nighttime?
Yes, I am.
Yes, because that's a great way. Yeah,
going.
Great.
You've signposted where I'm going with this. So I had this vision, this picture of you who was going into these rooms and talking about philosophy and art. And then, mind my own business, all of a sudden these PTRs appear and they are highly sexual, very beautiful.
They're sensual, Royful. I'd like to correct you on that.
Okay. Well, one person sensual is another person sexual.
My experience. Okay, fair enough, which we can discuss. And you might, I don't know if people, all of your audience know what PTR means.
Oh, Paul. To refresh, basically it's the image, it's the icon, it's the you know, the little image that you have displayed next to our names, that you use that in the evening. You switch from, let's say, business you to sensual you. Why do you do that?
Yeah, this is the perfect kind of, this was how it all was inspired. And I think that because this is me integrating into the whole of my person, is that I am not just, you know, and I think most of us are not. Most of us are not just one thing. We're not just two things or three things. We're a plethora or whatever the word is. We're multiples of things that make up ourselves. And what I tend to be aware of and then highlight is how we actually, you know, fractionalize ourselves. I mean, and we do experience a fractionalization. We talk about that a lot, even on this app. But I think in such an obvious way, we fractionalize ourselves is we separate a huge part of our humanity. And that's our sensuality. And I do feel that I engage sensuality much more than sexuality. And I understand also that that translates to people in different ways. But really, it's me that I'm, and I think all humans, we're sensual creatures. And sensuality isn't only sexual. It's how we feel and how we sense the world around us. And that is, primarily through our bodies, but not only. I mean, the whole process of cognition isn't just, you know, through our bodies, but it is this experience and this feel this vibe. And so what I like to do, I enjoy doing, one is integrating to myself and then allowing that experience to be shared, because because it's true. And I do think that it also provokes
but you're
and
sharing
confronts
it.
Kind of a void.
But I think what's interesting though is that you share it through a medium which on the platform that we're on never gets discussed that often, because you put it there and it's visual and you hardly ever refer to it.
Yeah, I never do. But that matches my ethos, because so much of what I'm about is investigating the spaces in between, that which is less measurable, right? What's generally missing from conversations or experiences or, you know, whatever it is. That's what I'm interested in. That's what I find inspiring sometimes, or disrupting. And that's a whole other kind of area of my focus, is inspiration and disruption as some primary means for which we as humans are invited into change.
So one of the ways of which you're being an angel and an advocate for intimacy is through disruption. Now, I'm not saying those two things are
inspiration.
Synonyms.
And inspiration, it's not only one thing, right?
Okay.
But those images tend to be a little bit disruptive, but maybe for some people inspiring. And either way, I'm happy.
Or distracting.
But distraction is a form of disruption.
That's true.
Is it not? So that's that falls under disruption for me.
All right. So what we need to do is quickly pause because we do have a few people in the room right now. I'm speaking to Nicole Stark, who is on my podcast, Intelligent Speech. I'm recording this interview for my podcast, Intelligent Speech. And that's kind of it in a nutshell. And it's lovely to see Marseille Butler in the audience because she will be coming on the show next. Another wonderful person who I've met.
Yay,
on Clubhouse. So if you are in the audience, that's exactly what we're doing. I'm recording a podcast, which is the reason why I didn't exactly really kind of publicize it, but I did want dare I say friends and family to wander in and to listen. And so far we've got a good quorum of people. I'm going to speak for maybe about another 15-20 minutes. Then after that, I will invite people to come up on stage and contribute and ask Nicole, what is intimacy? Is it better than sexuality? What are the differences between the two? What is her definition of?
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Intimacy. You're many things, but a provocateur is, you know, you say disruptor, and I think provocateur. I think that's a more elegant way of describing
it. I agree. I prefer that. But, you know, yes.
Let's talk about this definition of intimacy and kind of like sexuality, because you've already chastised me and you said, no, it's sensuality. And, you know, here I am minding my own business, talking in a room at whatever time it was, 2-3 weeks ago. And I'm distracted by your image. I'm going, wait a minute, is this a couple loving each other, biting each other, killing each other? It was utterly wonderful. It was, I don't know what was being discussed. All of a sudden, my brain has gone to what you were displaying. But then when we spoke off mic, you know, you said, you surprised me by saying, you know what? No, I'm not necessarily that sexual a person.
No. That isn't what I said.
Oh, good. I'm glad one of us was taking notes or recording the conversation.
No, I'm highly sexual, but that sexuality, and this is a great point, is that our kind of assumptions that we've been socialized, which is again what I'm confronting, is that our social assumptions that come with our different expressions. So because I focus on sensuality, and, you know, don't feel the need to compartmentalize myself because I feel like, hey, we're all adults, fucking deal with it, especially when it's a great part of our humanity. And, you know, intimacy isn't only sexual, and we can be playful with people that we're not even sexually attracted to. So there's all these elements, right? But there's this assumption that because I focus on sensuality, that I must be super sexually active. And that's what I'm saying, is that I'm highly sexual and sensual, but I'm not actually super, like, there's an assumption that I would be very promiscuous. And I'm actually not. I wouldn't judge myself if I were. So I'm not saying that that's bad. I'm just saying that that's an assumption that very much is real, that we've been socialized that, oh, somebody who's very sexual or sensual must be very sexually active and much more towards the promiscuity side. And I'm not. I'm actually not that promiscuous at all. And again, it's not a judgment. I'm just saying the assumption. I'm not. I'm pretty. I mean, when I'm in a relationship and in a committed relationship, I'm super active. But when I'm not, I'm not. You know, that assumption is what I. And this is the point to a lot of my work or self expressions or the way that I engage others is to a little bit provoke all of these things. To different degrees, to different people.
Mm. I must admit, the older I've got, the more I've realized that the physical side of intimacy is slightly overblown. And I like intimacy. And there is, and it can be a prelude to sex. It can be a prelude to a whole plethora of things. But I think that, and this is the reason why we're having this conversation, because that conversation that we had over the phone for me was stark and revealing, in that how I'd got you wrong, or assumed I'd made certain kind of assumptions. But then it forced me actually to look at myself and why do I like the things that I like. And I suppose in large part it's because I'm getting older. You know, I'm not the horn bucket that I was when I was 21.
But that's not bad either, Roy. No. Right? And we tend to collapse them all, or mm-hmm. become binary, that it's one or the other. And that's exactly what I'm challenging, is that intimacy, sensuality, sexuality doesn't need to be collapsed into the same thing, nor does it need to be either or. Like, all of it is human. All of it is available to us. And usually in combinations, back to my metaphor of nutrients and the synergy, those elements of ourselves are exponentially more synergetic and able to assimilate, meaning they get better together versus separate. And that's something that I think we know intellectually, but we're not very good at staying integrated so that we can experience that kind of exponential advancement or expansion of an experience, because they're all working together in ways that we can't measure. We don't know. It's very difficult to trace, but it's there.
But let's try and measure. Let's try and chase. So if I'm going to be intimate with you, or if someone's going to be intimate with you, right? What level of intimacy are you going to put above another? Experiential? Is it spending quality time? Is it having being able to share downtime with somebody? The older I get, the more I appreciate that it's one thing to go on a flashy first date, second date, whatever, to have a great holiday with somebody. But actually, it's the quality downtime when you've got nothing planned, which is incredibly intimate. It's incredibly honest and revealing. Can you reveal that part of yourself? Is it spiritual intimacy, which you see as more important? You know, somebody who gets you on a deep level where you can literally finish each other's sentences, you know what the other one is thinking, you feel empathetically intimate towards them. Is it the fact that you can share ideas with somebody, you can be honest intellectually with somebody, you can just lay yourself bare and you know they're not going to judge you if you say the right thing, but also you have this inquiring mind and the pair of you together can, you know, have this oneness intellectually?
I mean, yes, yes, and yes. I mean, without like listing, I mean, how long would it take us to list all? I mean, I would say it's of that.
Yeah, but which is most important? Which is most important? And do they change over as we get older?
And I don't think there is the most important. I think they're all important. It's kind of silly to me how, like, you know, the love languages, for example. Mm-hmm. It's like it's always this big eye roll, you know, that's been around for, I don't know, the last 15, 10 years or whatever. I don't even know how old it is. But it's like, oh, there's the 4 or 5 love languages. I forget what it is. And it's like, okay, that's, you know, to some extent useful. But again, it's trying to reduce an experience or a primary experience, which can be helpful originally, you know, initially or in some instances, but really it's all of it. And I would say that we overly focus on what we experience as intimate versus what the other experiences as intimate or valuable or whatever it is. And I think what is interesting about intimacy is there is a co-creation that is at play. And that it is this giving and receiving. I kind of make everything about dance, since I'm a dancer. So for me, it's about the movement. There's movement. It's not static. It's dynamic. And it is, it's taking cues from other. It's matching. It's responding to other. It's not just self. And that we experience, I think, satisfaction and benefit when we enter into other in ways that we wouldn't be able to expect. And so for me, like, I love being able to give to others and pay attention to what they experience is valuable. And then it's that dance. We enter into the dance. So I'm not so sure how helpful it is to pick one or two or three, and especially not outside of a particular relationship, because every relationship is going to have different answers to those things based on their particular dynamic.
Okay. Let me ask somewhat of a purient question, but I believe you're going to answer it honestly. Can you have sex with somebody which is enjoyable, but there is no intimacy?
Well, of course. I mean, we experience that, right? We experience all kinds of sex. We experience all different kinds of sex with different levels of intimacy or no intimacy at all. And we experience different levels of pleasure, you know, with or without intimacy, right? I mean, all of those things exist.
Because I struggle to now, if I'm being honest with you. I, again, you know, it's that whole thing where you point the finger. So I'm pointing the finger at you and there's three fingers pointing back. I struggle to. I'm not bothered about that type of sex anymore.
Well, I mean, this is the, you know, I suppose to each their own. I think that what I enjoy is inviting others to continue to expand their experiences of the good. And usually that expansion of the good requires a few things. And maybe this is what you're asking of me, Royfield. I think one of the things that intimacy really requires that humans are not good at is engaging risk. And part of what I do in, like, you know, my expressions, like, let's say of my PTR pictures or my conversations. And if you're with me in person, I mean, it's, you know, if I didn't have pictures, I'm still able to live into my sensuality in certain ways. It requires risk, and risk on multiple layers, right? When it requires risk for me, because it's a certain kind of vulnerability or going against the grain, but it also is, the invitation to others to engage the risk, that which they're not used to, or which is maybe a little uncomfortable. So, and I think that we're not very connected with how intimacy does require risk outside of the obvious instances of fear that we react in. Like, you know, and there's a lot of people we can observe, and I'm sure many of us have been in relationships where when something gets a little too intimate, we recoil or we contract because that's scary. And the reason why that's scary is because we're afraid. There's some risk involved, and it's an uncertain outcome, and the stakes are higher. So I think that that's something that we can look at in terms of intimacy. And I try to, you know, create an invitation of that's good, though, that there is this, for me, this experience of surrender. There's an experience of like a natural limitation.
That's deeply intimate, though, to trust somebody to surrender. That's deeply intimate, because it's not only the physical, it's spiritual, and it's compassionate, isn't it? That you know what the boundaries are, which each actually have. So you give
agency. Yes, but being willing to be hurt nonetheless. And I think this is what I notice and observe of others. Like, I'm willing to be hurt. I accept that as inevitable, rather than trying to protect myself from pain or hurt. Instead, I try to choose wisely, you know, where I'm taking risk, right? And I can evaluate what might be healthy kinds of pain versus unhealthy kinds of pain. Like, we definitely want to mention that. But I find that I trust myself. And so therefore, I also expect it to be painful. And yet I also expect, or I hope for, I should say, in a different way, that it might be worth it. And even, and what that is requires me to engage a little bit more sophisticated cost versus benefit, right? Because a lot of the benefit isn't immediate, and yet some of the pain is. And I think this is what we are missing in our kind of navigation skills inside relationship and intimacy, is that we recoil from potential pain. We recoil from actual pain, active pain. And then we're less connected to the benefits or the upsides. And that means that we're not able to accept, surrender, or I think reap a lot of the benefits that are available to us, that where the potential is, because we're not navigating in ways that we can make these decisions a little bit more powerfully.
You know, I completely agree. And I think how I make sense of how, let's say, we are more ready to bail out of relationships now at the first sign of trouble is because as a society, as a culture, we've put too much store by romantic love, forgetting the other types of love that there actually are, that when we don't necessarily feel that flush of kind of heady romantic love towards a partner, we forget there's other types of love, that compassionate love, that the love of fidelity, and that level of intimacy.
And yes, I think our friendships, we do the same, Royfield, right? We if we experience a little pain, or if our disappointment or our expectations aren't being met inside of friendships, people recoil and contract. And whereas I expect that, like, of course I'm going to fuck up. Of course I'm going to disappoint you. And of course you're going to fuck up and you're going to disappoint me. That doesn't mean that, oh, I'm out. This relationship is no good. Now it can be, like, if there's something particularly and extremely unhealthy, of course. But I think this is the problem with how we collapse all of these things into one, that with the intimacy, and here's a great point. I don't operate that differently inside my friendships as I do my romances. There certainly are differences, of course, but there's not that many, because it is a relationship and relationships require similar things. And particularly, I don't really have many relationships, I can't think of at all, any close ones that don't have intimacy, that aren't deeply intimate. I have many acquaintances, but anyone who's close to me, there is absolute depth of intimacy. And the same things are required of whoever we're intimate with, whether it's romantic or not. This is the same risk is required, the same capacity, right? All of the same human processes are required.
I think that's a perfect place for us to have a pause. We've got a nice little audience listening to our conversation, and I've now invited four friends on stage. If you would like to kind of join in with this conversation, now is your time. Hold your hand up and I'll pull you up on stage. You will make the podcast, so bear that in mind. If you're a little bit shy about being published, maybe this isn't the time for you to jump on stage. But we've been talking about intimacy and how important intimacy is and different types of intimacy. So now I'd like to invite my friends Aram, Ajahn, Marseille and Jaehoon, maybe just to pose a question to take the conversation in a direction of which they see fit. Feel free to unmute yourself.
Hey, Roy Feldman, Nick Well. This has been a really great conversation. I've really enjoyed it. And, I think one of the things that's really interesting about what you were just saying about fear, and also what Royfield was saying earlier about the intimacy of this app, which sort of distills us down to a single picture and a voice, which isn't to oversimplify that. That's still a lot of complexity. I think that there's a lot of potential for intimacy, in part because the amount of fear that we have is reduced. You know, some of the self-consciousness that can get in the way of intimacy, for example, goes away because there's just not as much to sort of see, to feel somehow more pure to me in some ways. And I'm just curious to hear you tap into that a little bit, you know, with this kind of experience, how does that kind of create different opportunities for intimacy? And, and maybe that has something to do with the age that we're in terms of people being connected digitally more often and also the time that we're in terms of the pandemic. Because I do know for me specifically that having the opportunity to connect with strangers in a moment where strangers were dangerous due to this virus, this pandemic, was a particular moment in time that was deeply meaningful for me.
Yeah, the first thought that comes to my mind, Aram, is that for me, because I am usually the person in my friendships and otherwise to inspire intimacy and to make room for that and to kind of create that the app didn't really make that any different for me. But what it did do, and I think this is probably true for all of us, is that it increases our access, right? To like how many people, you know, we have so much more access to all different kinds of people. And also it increases the time and duration of our contact. And which is not the same in real life, right? In real life, we might go spend, you know, an hour with somebody or two, you know, once a week or maybe once a month or whatever, once a quarter. But on this app, you can spend hours and hours, maybe hundreds of hours with the same people or person. So I think that the quantity of time, and the duration, and then, I mean, just the access, all, I think those are the two factors that I would say made a difference for me personally. But I think that for many people, there was even more that like you said, that there was more intimacy available because it made it easier, with less barriers for some of the things that scare us.
Jaehoon, Ajun, Anam, do you have a question for our esteemed guest?
Oh, gosh. Sorry.
I do. Thanks, Royfield, and thanks, Nicole, for this. So within queer culture, I think it's pretty common to identify a split between romance and sexuality, especially in terms of people who are asexual or aromantic. And then people who kind of break down heteroromantic, homoromantic, things like that, depending on how deep into labels we're getting. And I'm wondering, Nicole, if you can kind of speak to how you parse the difference between intimacy and romance.
Yeah, well, I'm pretty cis, you know, hetero, so I don't have the same experiences, and you could teach me on this. But on first thought, you know, because I feel like I can make a distinction because obviously I'm intimate with all kinds of people that I'm not romantically involved with or sexually involved with. And I feel like I kind of said earlier that it's really similar. And I think that it's very contextual, right? Which is kind of the obvious answer. So I don't want to be over simple, but I do think it's the context and maybe the intention and the kind of partnership. Like I can be, and I am actually quite playful and flirtatious with same sex that I'm absolutely would have no sexual or romantic interest in. Also playful and flirtatious with men that I don't have any sexual or romantic interest in. And so where it becomes romantic, I think is more of the intention. For me anyway, I'll speak to my own experience of when I'm actually interested in something romantic. Then for me, my experience is a little bit different, but then that doesn't really come to any fruition unless there's some mutual agreement, right? There's mutual consent that, oh, we're both romantic. And then what that means is defined purely by those two people. And I think that we can all kind of experience the differences in our romances, right? The different ways we engage different people. And that, does that map with your experience, Jaehoon? Or am I saying your name right, by the way? I'm probably butchering your name, sorry.
It's Jaehoon. Thanks for
Jaehoon. Jaehoon. I apologize. But does that map with your experience or no, not at all?
A little bit. I mean, I think because I've been within a context where we speak specifically of romance and sexuality, I think of all relationships that I have on any deep level as an intimate relationship. And then romance is a step further in some kind of way. I would say that many people on this stage right now are people who I feel pretty intimate with through just like conversations that we've had or the ways that I feel like I've gotten to know some of them. Also, my two throuple partners happen to be on stage. So there's that as well.
That's awesome. I mean, and this is the thing, like why, like, you know, we have, and this is kind of, I guess, the whole point of what I'm trying to do is somehow gently confront how we're so uncomfortable as humans. And I don't know if this is just an American thing, because I can only speak for my American culture, but surely we have puritanical roots, right? Where, you know, where we absolutely, you know, made the physical and romantic and sexual very compartmentalized and in some instances bad or evil, right? And I think that's just so ridiculous and not healthy. So how can we be more, you know, comfortable and good with just being more integrated, that we're that's what it is to be human, you know, to engage our, you know, all of our relationships and why do we feel like we have to, why are some things inappropriate? And I think that's what I'm really confronting. And I try to do that gently and, you know, without even with my PTRs, which we referred to earlier, like, I don't think they're gross at all. I mean, and, you know, some people could do that. And I find that not very effective at all when you're, you know, when things are a little too crass or gross. And maybe some people would think that mine are, which is a whole other discussion. But my effort is to really engage sensuality and intimacy and, you know, to be integrative in our nature, not to be, you know, overly, sharing too much, you know, where it crosses the line. But everybody's line is different.
One of the interesting things that you said to me, which is, I think, maybe the reason why then I reached out to you and said, would you come on my podcast? Can I record you? Is that you were very conscious of the fact that you were not just sat on that ragged edge, that you were crossing over it. And we talked about you being a provocateur before. I think that's a key part of your shtick, is it not?
You're right. It is. And I think that I'm willing to take that risk. And yet, even so, I don't want to be rigid about it. Like if it actually does cross a line where some people don't like it, one, I either have to be okay with that because I've kind of determined that that might be more of their issue than mine, and also very willing to make adjustments if I'm not being fair in some way or sensitive, right? To be responsible with that engagement. And that's where I think, you know, I'm inviting an intimacy, right? I'm inviting a partnership to where if you engage it, you know, let's engage it together.
Hmm. Are we maybe doing a, you know, coming back full circle where we are talking about art, one of the things which you're heavily interested in, and the performative nature that you are, you know, poking holes, trying to get a response, and that response can be manifest however. But, you know, what you're using to provoke that response is always some level of pictorial intimacy, which you then hope you can connect with somebody on another level of intimacy, whether it's just through communication, affection, compassion, etc.
Did you want me to respond to
that somehow? Yeah. I use a bit of a statement, but it's a way of kind of nicely wrapping up our conversation into a bow as well.
Yeah, I mean, the visual is just, it's just what's available to me, right, on this app. And it was pretty organic. It's just me being me because I feel like that. I am expressing how I'm feeling. And I'm more free to have that expressions in the evening because it's a little more chill and relaxed, right? So it was just organic for me. In real life, it comes out differently. Obviously, I'm not showing people pictures, walking around. You know, it's different.
Well, Well, listen, thank you, Nicole Stark, for coming on to Intelligent Speech, my occasional podcast, which I only do when I bump into somebody interesting and think that they're worthy of investigation. So thank you. Thank you for coming on onto the show. You're the first guest of 2021. That's how rarely I do these shows. And thank you for being honest and provoking us intellectually with ideas of intimacy and how they can contrast with sexuality. If you are in the audience, I will be doing this every now and then. Marseille Butler is actually going to be next, where I just talk to people who are actually just quite like, I think they're bloody interesting. I've created a little room, a little club, sorry, called Intelligent Speech. Give that a little bit of a follow. No doubt some of you who may be on this stage or in the audience will be getting a little note from me saying, can I put you on my podcast, Intelligent Speech? Nicole Stark, it's been utterly lovely speaking to you. Thank you for gracing us with your eminence, madam. And thank you, everybody, for spending time to listen to us chunter away and to talk about intimacy versus sexuality. Take care, everybody. Give Nicole a follow. She's most awesome. And give the club Intelligent Speech a follow. We'll see you all again soon. And we'll chat in depth about another topic.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape.
And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Thanks, Rachel. Thanks for being generous, and for to you all to be being generous with me.